I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. This is The Takeaway, and it is good to have you with us on our politics show. Now, it went down in New Jersey this week. On Tuesday night, Democratic incumbent Governor Phil Murphy debated Republican challenger Jack Cittarelli in the final debate of the New Jersey gubernatorial race. There are only two candidates running for office, but three opponents showed up at the debate. Murphy, Cittarelli, and the crowd.
We funded.
Thank you, audience.
Every dime.
I like to believe that y'all out there, as you're listening to The Takeaway, are either cheering or booing with the same kind of Jersey-level enthusiasm. And I gotta tell you, it's pretty wild outside the debate hall, too. Former New Jersey Governor Republican Christine Todd Whitman is among the leaders of a new movement to purge Trump loyalists and reinvigorate mainline conservatism within the Republican Party. They're called
the Renew America Movement. We need regular Americans to step forward. And we're calling all heroes.
Now, this week, the Republicans of the Renew America movement, well, they endorsed two New Jersey Democrats and a Philadelphia Democrat in those bids for state legislative seats. And while New Jersey Republicans are fighting for the soul of their party, Virginia Democrats seem to be sitting on the sidelines of their gubernatorial contest.
In Northern Virginia, a Democratic stronghold, possible problems for the former governor.
Early voting has already begun in the Commonwealth, and the numbers in Virginia's bluest counties are way down compared to 2017.
Fairfax, Arlington, and Alexandria sent just a sixth of Virginia's early votes so far. That's a huge drop from the last governor's race, when the Blue Bastion ultimately delivered a full third of Virginia's early votes.
Okay. Down in the Peach State, Georgia's election battle is less about candidates and campaigns and more about fairness and fraud. On Wednesday, a judge in the state dismissed the final lawsuit from the 2020 election litigation. He ruled that the plaintiffs have no standing to sue the Fulton County Election Board. But the decision comes on the heels of two Fulton County election workers being fired for shredding registration forms. So I'm thinking it is probably pretty safe to assume that confidence in the state's electoral system is less than robust as the 2022 midterms approach. There's a lot of state politics shaping up around the country, and that's where we begin today's Politics Roundtable with Jessica Taylor, the Senate and Governor's Editor for the Cook Political Report with Amy Walter, and Zach Montalero, State Politics Reporter at Politico.
Thanks for having me.
Hi there.
All right, I want to begin with you, Jessica. What were the takeaways from the governor's debate in New Jersey this week?
I think that there's passion that people on both sides, and, you know, New Jersey certainly has a reputation for kind of being rough and tumble. So I wasn't really surprised. COVID issues have driven a lot of people to become more engaged. And you have Governor Phil Murphy there that has put on some pretty strict restrictions. And this to me is sort of a test of whether voters approve of those. We do see they have that in polls. You know, he's mandated masks in schools. A more controversial step he took recently was actually mandating kids over two, if they are in daycare or certain things, that they now have to wear a mask. So that's gotten pushback. That's gotten pushback from Cittarelli. But of course, New Jersey was at the height of the pandemic to begin with, but, you know, cases have been more under control than even some, you know, southern, less populated states that they've had to deal with. But I see COVID as a major issue happening here. And I think you saw that reflected in perhaps the debate.
Let me come down here to you, Zach, and ask what you make of this Renew America movement, and specifically that it's led in part by Christine Todd Whitman, the first woman to serve as governor of the state of New Jersey, and sort of a Republican of a different era, but, you know, clearly here making bipartisan efforts to actually bring in different kinds of folks into the system.
Yeah, you know, I am broadly relatively skeptical of the, you know, anti-Trump wing of the Republican Party. We've seen displayed kind of over and over and over again how well they do within the Republican Party. Now, you know, how many of these voters who were soft Republicans in decades past now just identify as Democrats, identify as independents who are voting Democratic you know, in these suburban areas that we've heard so much about over the last 4 years, right? Like, so what is the crowd that these groups are kind of reaching for? That's the big question, right? Did most of those people who would, you know, identify as a Christine Todd Whitman Republican, are they already Democrats? Have they already jumped over to the other side, and are they staying there? I tend to believe that at this point, you know, the suburban shifts are we've seen the shifts in the suburbs of the last, you know, 4 years of the last decade, whatever you want to call it. And these groups where with people who were former Republican elected officials are really the folks without a home at this point.
And yet that dynamic of a Republican Party like the New Jersey Republican Party, which to be clear is quite different than Republican parties in other parts of the country, that dynamic that that there was booing and cheering and the kind of almost, you know, Trump rally like atmosphere at that New Jersey gubernatorial debate. Zach, does that tell you something about you know, the fact that there is still this acrimony despite the fact that you've got these, like, I guess we're going to call them politically homeless Republicans in the state?
Yeah. I've told me I grew up on the right side of the Hudson River. I'm a native New Yorker, so glad to be from New York and not New Jersey. I think that's just, you know, I don't want to call it par for the course for tri-state area politics, right? But, you know, mm-hmm. we New Yorkers, New Jerseyans certainly a little bit more willing to share their opinions about what they think about their politicians. There was that ad from Governor Murphy, and I think it was only online this week, just kind of poking fun how his opponent, when he was, I think it was city council, when he held a local office, tried to ban swearing, right? And only in the tri-state area, only in New York, only in New Jersey is that probably a bad thing. You know,
I'm pretty sure it's already banned down here in North Carolina where I live. Everyone's very polite. Like, oh my goodness, it's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's just a different kind of atmosphere that, you know, that us New Yorkers, New Jersey, you know, folks in the area carry themselves just a little bit differently. I don't know if that's any sign of increased acrimony in the state or not. I think that acrimony is already built in.
So, you know, I've just been talking about the ways that Republicans in New Jersey might be different, but it's also true that Democrats are a bit different there. You know, in part because there is that long tradition in the tri-state area around the strength of policing, firefighters, first responders. And I'm wondering if Murphy's positions on civilian review boards and also some, you know, additional sort of tightening around local police departments might actually alienate some of the potential Democratic voters who could support Murphy.
That's the big question with not just Governor Murphy, but a lot of Democrats is, you know, as the parties realign and shift, you know, how do you hold on to those sometimes thought of as blue collar jobs? I don't necessarily know that a New York area police or a firefighter has much in common with somebody who works, you know, elsewhere and considers himself blue collar. But how do you hold on to those blue collar jobs while also the increasingly suburban, you know, tilt of these parties? New Jersey, very famously, is a lot of suburbs to New York City. It's striking that balance between, you know, can I reach these voters that Democrats have traditionally talked to, you know, blue collar union workers, and while, you know, pushing different social messages that are more in tune with some suburbanites.
So, Jessica, why don't we just wander on down the East Coast a little bit to Virginia? I'm wondering what you make of these sort of low numbers that we're seeing with the early voting. You know, Zach and I have just been talking about the suburbs, and obviously Northern Virginia, which in many ways is D.C. light, they seem to be not turning out in the same numbers that we've seen in previous state elections.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit surprising to me because I actually live here in Alexandria. And I mean, there's a lot of local elections going on too that I, you know, normally I think would be a bigger driver. You would have people more coming out. Certainly there's plenty of signs and things out, but we aren't seeing that in the numbers yet. I mean, there's still a little over 2 weeks, certainly. You know, Virginia, they just made it easier to early vote right ahead of the pandemic, of course. Before, you had to have an excuse. So, you know, maybe voters aren't as used to requesting those. In a way, I think it's still sort of more of a tradition of going to the polls here in Virginia, aside from the pandemic. But I mean, this is not encouraging to Democrats, certainly. I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, a five alarm fire yet, because we have to wait and see. But that complacency is always, this is the biggest threat to holding this seat, which, again, as I mentioned, this is a seat that Biden won by 10 points. But as we see his numbers sort of crater nationally, one poll yesterday showed them sort of rebounding in Virginia and McAuliffe having a little bit more of a comfortable lead. We'll see if that was more of an outlier or if other polls are continuing to show it close. But that's sort of where you were seeing Democrats and McAuliffe making this argument in the last few weeks that if you stay home, you could have a Republican. But in a similar argument was made, of course, when we were seeing sort of lower numbers coming in the California recall. Now, they had a step taken out for them because every voter there got a ballot mailed to them. So much easier to just do that when you don't have to request it, go anywhere, different things. Democrats here in Virginia are going to have to convince them it takes a little bit of work to vote. You still got to go out and do this. But I think voters are frankly exhausted after the past 4 years, 5 years. Here in Virginia, we vote every single year as well, so it can get exhausting. And you're seeing McAuliffe sort of bring in the big guns. I'm going this weekend. He's campaigning with Stacey Abrams in Northern Virginia and the Hampton Roads area in Virginia Beach. Next weekend, he's bringing in probably the biggest name you can get here, Barack Obama. You know, he has said he will campaign with Biden. There's been a bit of a question of that as his numbers have of course fallen. We don't have a date for that yet. And so their argument that they've got to make is you have to come out. You can't just sit this one out. But we do see, and a reason why we rate this race as toss up right now is because the enthusiasm is on the Republican side right now. And that's a big worry for Democrats.
Yeah, you know, your point about voter fatigue, just sort of in general in Virginia, I absolutely get, having grown up in Charlottesville. I'm not sure I knew there was a thing called an election year. It just seemed like elections were like dinner time, right? They're just like a constant part of life. But I am, you know, it is still true, though, Zach, that for example, we typically in any election that is an off year, so off presidential year, but especially in Virginia, where they are off even the midterm cycle, that tends to benefit Republicans, right? Because it tends to reduce turnout. Hasn't always been true in the Commonwealth, though. So I'm wondering if this just looks like regular cycle to you, or if there's something specific about 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing with Virginia is that we've heard this a lot from Governor McAuliffe, too, is that the candidate who is running against the party in the White House has almost always won the Virginia gubernatorial race for the last several decades. The one exception to that is Terry McAuliffe in 2009, rather. Did I get that right? The one exception to that is when Governor McAuliffe won the first time he ran for office, that Obama was in the White House in 2013. There we go. And he won. So, you know, if he was to win again, it's cutting against the historical norms. And I think that more than anything is kind of what's going against him, is that Virginia has been that swing state.
So, Jessica, let's stick with Virginia for just a second. Not only are there these big statewide races going on, but all 100 seats in the State House of Delegates are up for bids. Most of them are contested. And Democrats have definitely used their like 10 seat majority to pass some pretty sweeping progressive legislation, at least relative to Virginia, in recent years. Do you think that boldness is going to be rewarded or punished or just ignored in this election?
I think we're not sure yet. Certainly it's created some backlash among conservatives, and you are seeing, I think, some people get activated and motivated. And the state house is very much in play. And I think the question is, too, and this is the argument that, you know, Republicans in the for the House of Delegates are making, and then Terry McAuliffe, the Republican nominee for governor, is making, is that there needs to be a check in Richmond. So this is what Democrats' challenge is that not only do they have full control of Washington, of course, and I do think also because Virginia and Northern Virginia, especially so close to Washington, I think the gridlock in Congress and not getting an infrastructure or social programs bill like Biden and Democrats want to point to, that gridlock, I think, is hurting, too. And then when you have Democrats in control of Richmond, too, I think that factors in voters' minds as well. So education issues, I think, is one of the biggest things that we are seeing Republicans try to use here. I went to a Youngkin rally yesterday in Warrenton, which is in Fauquier County, sort of on the exurbs. It's a pretty conservative county, but you have other counties that have really switched over the Trump years, nearby Loudoun County, that was a pretty Republican area, now went easily for Biden in the last election. There's been fights at their school board meetings over transgender pronouns and, you know, masks and what's being taught in the schools. And Youngkin has really seized on something that McAuliffe said during the last debate, where he said that, you know, essentially parents shouldn't be telling schools what they're teaching. Well, he's trying to hopefully that can energize people. And I do think because of COVID, you had parents at home trying to take care of their kids. They're maybe getting more involved, seeing what their kids are doing, worried about them falling behind, that you do have parents that are perhaps more engaged and haven't been as engaged in politics. I talked to some voters there at this rally there yesterday. I had about 200 people. So education issues are playing in here. You know, there's been questions about whether to, you know, roll back gifted and talented programs in schools. And so there's a lot of, I think education is sort of at there on a lot of these issues, you know, policing issues as well for both sides they're trying to talk about. So there's a lot of local issues, but I think also a lot of these races have become nationalized, both at the gubernatorial and at the, you know, state legislature level too.
So, Zach, we are still more than a year away from the full-on midterms, but of course, gubernatorial races are already starting to heat up across the country. Are there other states? We've been kind of focused here on New Jersey and Virginia because they're coming up right away, but what other gubernatorial or Senate races are you watching closely?
Yeah, so we have 36 gubernatorial races next year, which is a lot. And as much as I would like to say I'm taking a trip out to Hawaii to cover that race, I probably won't be. But you know, there's a lot of those traditional battleground states that have gubernatorial races next year and that overlap with the Senate race. The one I'm probably keeping the closest attention on might be Georgia. That's going to get me yelled at for the other close states, but Georgia's just a really fascinating test case for a lot of different things. Republican Governor Brian Kemp, as everyone is probably aware, former President Trump is no fan of his. Trump has said at points that he'd rather have Stacey Abrams in the governor's mansion than Kemp. We're going to see if he gets a legitimate, serious primary challenger that the former president backs. And that's a real good test case of where the party is, where the Republican Party is, how tied it is to Trump. Can Trump defeat a sitting conservative incumbent governor? And then the other case is, of course, will Stacey Abrams run for Democrats? And Democrats are hoping and expecting that she will. And then how much, you know, how we've been slowly marching towards Georgia being a swing state. This will be a rematch of 2018 if Stacey Abrams runs and if Governor Kemp stays in office. And it's going to be a fascinating contest.
I feel like there's a lot of progressive listeners who might be listening and just found themselves shocked to realize that they agree with President Trump on an important, like a political and elections question, which is a preference for Stacey Abrams over Brian Kemp in the governor's mansion in Georgia. I'm wondering, are you also, Zach, watching Kansas or Pennsylvania? Those are the two I've been kind of interested in recently.
Yeah, so Kansas is another interesting one, too. There, it's Democratic Governor Laura Kelly, and everyone kind of stops and goes, wait, Democratic governor in Kansas? Yeah, she is the single Democrat governor running in a state that President Trump carried in 2020. She's the only one up for re-election in 2022. So it'll, of course, be a very close race there. Republicans feel pretty good. The sitting attorney general is really the only candidate there, Attorney General Schmidt. They feel pretty confident, but it's never easy to knock off a sitting incumbent governor. And it won't be easy to defeat Laura Kelly either. There was a poll early from Emily's List, which is a liberal group that backs pro-choice women, rather. And, you know, she's above water. So that's going to be a fun contest, if just for the fact that it is a race that there's a Democrat in a very red state. And Pennsylvania, too, it's going to be an open state race. Democrat Attorney General Josh Shapiro is almost assuredly going to be the Democratic nominee. And Republicans have a really, really, really messy primary. So we don't quite know how that's going to shake out yet.
Jessica, the sort of invocation here of Emily's List is a reminder that, again, all politics may be local, but there are these national issues. To what extent is the question of abortion going to be central in the elections that are coming up immediately and into the midterms?
So we have seen certainly McAuliffe use it in ads and bring it up in the debates because of Texas, of course, and voters in Virginia are overwhelmingly support abortion rights to, you know, at least certain weeks, more than the 6 weeks in Texas, certainly. And Youngkin was also caught on a tracker video where he was asked about his positions, where he, you know, is pro-life, and said, you know, I can't really talk about that right now while I'm running because it's going to lose me independent votes. So he's been, they are all hammering on that. I how much of an issue it becomes in governor's races, I think we'll see if the Texas law stands. Of course, we have the challenge to, before the Supreme Court coming from Mississippi. And that's, you know, that will come next summer, right ahead of some of these governor's races. So, yeah, it really could play a big part.
Jessica Taylor is the Senate and Governor's editor for the Cook Political Report. And Zach Montalero is state politics reporter at Politico. And we're going to both try to figure out how to get the takeaway to cover the Hawaii race. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.